Welcome to Menopause in the Kitchen, where we talk all things food and nutrition for women in their midlife years. I'm Rachel Cooper, dietitian and food lover, with a passion for sharing information about nutrition in practical ways so that you can take what you need and implement it into your lifestyle. Join me in my kitchen as I share bite-sized chunks of information to help you nourish your body and thrive in your midlife years and beyond. Welcome back, everyone, to Menopause in the Kitchen. Thanks for joining me again today. Today's episode is going to be on a particular topic that I think is quite relevant to women in the midlife years, perimenopause and menopause. Not necessarily in terms of what might be happening now, but more about what we can do to help ourselves in the future as we age. And so today's topic will be about food and how it might be able to help us keep our brains healthy and potentially prevent or at least delay cognitive decline. So basically, you know, your brain is responsible for making decisions and memory and all those sorts of things. We do get a decline in that as we age, and I'm going to talk today about whether or not we can delay that progression or at least stop it from accelerating, which can happen particularly in a lot of women. And also a bit about what the research says in this space, and particularly around things like dementia and cognitive decline. Can what we eat affect our risk of decline in, you know, cognitive decline or dementia as we age? So let's have a little chat about the stats first so that we can kind of put it into perspective as to why this might be important. Now, dementia, if I look at some of the stats from different countries, so here in Australia, where I live, dementia is the second leading cause of death overall. So it's a pretty... It's you know, one of the major causes of death of people in our country here. In the UK, it's actually the leading cause of death. So it's number one. And, you know, often we are thinking about things like heart disease and breast cancer and those sorts of things. And we think that that might be, or cancer in general might be, what's causing most of the deaths where we live. But in fact, in Australia and the UK, dementia is number one or number two cause of death. In the US, for those who are listening in from the US, it's the seventh leading cause of death. So not quite as high, possibly because the US has some other things that that are in those higher causes of death, rankings compared to Australia and the UK. And if we think about globally, so across the whole world, dementia is the seventh leading cause of death globally. So it is significant. And the one thing, and this is what really interests me and why I think I'm talking about it here, is that a higher proportion of people with dementia are women. And one of the factors that we might sort of say is, well, don't women live longer than men on average? So wouldn't that account for the fact that more women have dementia? And yes, that is one of the factors, that obviously the longer you live, the more chance you're going to have of dementia. And women do tend to live on average longer than men. So, okay, yes, that definitely can be one of the factors. However, after the age of 80, more women than men have dementia. And so, and the other stat is that when we look at Alzheimer's disease, which is a particular type of dementia, that 2/3 of people who have Alzheimer's disease from the age of 65 and onwards are women. So this is not necessarily just an age thing. Yes, the overall numbers would mean that women have higher incidence because we do live longer. But if we look at the same age group of men and women, we're still seeing a whole lot more women being diagnosed than men. So particularly with Alzheimer's disease, you know, 2/3 of people from the age of 65 over are women. So, you know, there's a lot more women who are suffering from this than there are men. Why is this so? Well, that's very interesting, because I was very interested to know what is this, like, what is going on here? What could be the reason? My mind was sort of going to hormonal, you know, obviously we have different hormones to men. Could that be a factor? But they don't actually know for sure at this stage, but they do have some theories around why this might be so. And one of them is that studies have shown that women have stronger immune systems, and that seems to be likely to have sort of evolved because when women have children and they're pregnant, we obviously want to protect the fetus, and having a better immune system will help to prevent any sort of viruses and nasties from getting into the body that may affect the unborn baby. And so this is one of the theories, is that women tend to, because of this sort of evolutionary factor, you know, our immune systems tend to be sort of stronger. And one of the things that backs this up is if we look at autoimmune diseases. Autoimmune diseases is basically when the immune system kind of goes into overdrive and it might attack or cause issues that it's not meant to, you know, so it's attacking certain things in the body that it's not meant to, the raised immune response is causing some symptoms. So women are 2 times more likely to have autoimmune diseases. And so that's possibly one of the reasons why they have this theory that it's an immune response, and that when we look at Alzheimer's disease in particular, Alzheimer's disease comes from these amyloid plaques that sort of become deposited in the brain, which cause the issues of Alzheimer's disease. And it is thought at this stage that maybe these plaques put in, well, that they're in the brain in smaller amounts to fight off infections, that their role is actually to protect the brain. But if they get a bit out of control, that is when we end up with Alzheimer's. And so the theory is that if women have a higher immune response, that maybe this is why the amyloid plaques in the brain increase, because the amyloid is, you know, all about sort of fighting off infections and the immune response in the brain. And so if it's, again, similar to an autoimmune disease, if it's kind of gone into hyperdrive, those amyloid plaques get bigger and then they cause the issues of Alzheimer's. So that's the theory. Basically, we don't really know. We're just sort of looking at what information is available now from the research. But I thought it was really interesting. And I think particularly considering the fact that, you know, dementia and Alzheimer's disease are you know, such high leading causes of death in many, you know, I guess wealthy countries, I think that we will have more answers to this as time goes on, and it's certainly a priority in terms of research. But for now, that's basically where we think these issues are coming from. So I guess the next question is, can we do anything about this? Can we slow that down? Can we slow the brain's progression? Because, I mean, the reality is, as we get older, just like all the other kind of organs and systems in our body, as we get older, they do start to reduce in terms of their function. And the brain is certainly not the brain is certainly one of those. But can we do anything to slow that down? And then, of course, we know that for many people, they may actually get dementia or Alzheimer's disease a lot earlier than others. And why is that? And is there any way that we can influence that or change that? And so, obviously, because I'm a dietitian and I talk about food, what I looked into is the effect of nutrition and different types of foods and ways of eating, and whether that has any effect on, dementia down the track or cognitive decline. And one of the most, I guess, researched areas in terms of this is something called the MIND diet, M-I-N-D. And what this is a combination of two different styles of eating, two different diets that have been researched quite well separately. So one is the DASH diet, which was a way of eating and particular foods and so on that has been quite well researched and shown to reduce hypertension or high blood pressure. And so there's the DASH diet has, lots and lots of research around it. And then there's the Mediterranean diet, which also has lots of research around it. So the Mediterranean diet is basically sort of the more traditional way of eating that the countries along the Mediterranean have eaten, their traditional diet, I guess. And again, lots of research has been done around the Mediterranean diet and its, protective effect in terms of different chronic diseases. And so these two diets have sort of been researched separately for different reasons. And then what they did was actually brought aspects of both of those together to form the MIND diet. And what they have found in terms of observational studies. So again, I'll try not to get into too much detail about research and studies, but basically observational studies are looking at a range of people and the types of foods that they eat and whether they're seeing, a lower incidence of a particular disease. So in this case, they were looking at particular foods that fit this MIND diet, so the combination of that DASH and Mediterranean diet. People who were sort of eating more of those foods and their risk or their incidence of dementia and cognitive decline. And so when they looked at these studies and put those two together, they observed that there was a lower risk of all-cause dementia and Alzheimer's disease in people who tended to eat this way. So obviously then there's been sort of more research done since then to look into the specifics of, okay, well, how does this actually work? Can we take this style of eating and, say, prescribe it to people, and are we going to then be able to potentially see a reduction in dementia? And so far, there actually hasn't been a lot of what we call interventional studies. I think there's only been two. Only one of them was of good quality. And so what they actually did was it was a randomized control trial. So they had two different groups who had, they sort of kept the diet the same, except that one group got more of these foods from the MIND diet and the other didn't. And no one knows, so it's randomized. So they just, I shouldn't say no one knows, but they know what they're eating, but it's randomized. So they just randomly sort of select, you're going to have the MIND diet and you're going to have the control diet. And then they have a look to see, does prescribing this MIND diet significantly have an effect? And what they found was it didn't. but I need to say that this is quite new. The actual intervention studies are quite new. So there's really only been one good quality one. So we need to potentially look at more research to see if intervention actually makes a difference. The other intervention study was not as good quality. So it's, not something that we probably want to include when we're making conclusions. So it's early days yet. There probably needs to be more of these intervention studies to actually look at whether the MIND diet really can reduce dementia. So they're the two different types of studies that are being done. So observationally, they look and go, oh, people who are eating those foods tend to have lower sort of incidence of dementia. But when they actually prescribed this diet to people, they didn't quite see a difference. Okay, so that's basically a quick summary of what the research is at this point. I think the other thing to keep in mind when we're thinking about these, and although the Mediterranean diet has been very, very well researched, I tend to be reluctant to recommend it to everyone. As a blanket, a lot of people I see, in the medical and health fields will say, oh, Mediterranean style of eating, that's the way to go. I'm very reluctant to do that because of a few things. One, it is one particular type of traditional diet that has been studied very well and has clearly got a lot of money invested in it to study the effects of it. Yes, the studies are wonderful and they do show really good positive results. However, it's one cultural diet. And I am very reluctant to prescribe a cultural diet to everyone because, number one, do we know that this particular way of eating is going to work for all people of all different cultures and backgrounds? And secondly, are we dismissing other people's cultural foods and ways of eating by saying the Mediterranean way is how you should eat, and because it helps, reduce all these health problems? But we're only doing that because we've got all the research, and other cultural diets have not necessarily been researched quite as much. So I'm very reluctant to talk about the Mediterranean style of eating as a blanket kind of recommendation. And I'll give you one example. When I was sort of looking into the MIND diet and looking into research of nutrition and dementia and cognitive function, there is a hypothesis, and I'm very interested in this because it is one of the reasons why I am reluctant to sort of talk too much about the Mediterranean diet. There's a hypothesis that the preferred diet for the brain, and this potentially could, be true for other parts of the body as well, but there's a hypothesis that the preferred diet for the brain may actually be population specific. So it depends on where you're from, what your cultural background is, and so on, as to what is going to work best for you. And I'll explain why they think this is And that's because there was a study, it was in Sweden actually, and they found that the Nordic dietary pattern, so the traditional Nordic way of eating, was more protective of cognitive decline than the MIND diet was when they studied that in a Swedish population. So they had a range of Swedish people, and they compared the traditional Nordic diet and the MIND diet, which, like I said, sort of incorporates the Mediterranean style of eating. And they found that their traditional Nordic diet actually had more protective effect. And so this is an example, I guess, of where we need to be careful about prescribing these diets to everyone because they might be specific to, you know, a particular culture. The other thing, I guess, to point out is when we look at the studies that have been done on the MIND diet and you know, all those observational studies that showed, you know, that there was a decreased risk of cognitive impairment. Most of these studies have been done in North America, and probably the next would be Europe. So sort of North America and parts of Europe. I don't know specifically which parts of Europe, but I would imagine it's probably specific countries within Europe, is where most of these studies have come from. There have been a few that have been done in Australia, a few in Asia, and I think only one or two in South America. So we need to, again, be careful that we're not taking that information and thinking that it then applies to all different populations and cultures. So potentially we could say that the MIND diet might be appropriate for reducing the risk of cognitive decline in people in North America, because that is really where most of the research has come from. And we can't necessarily extrapolate that and say that it's going to work everywhere else. And, you know, that Swedish study was a perfect example where that didn't really show that in that particular population. I guess the other thing we need to do is also consider that there are a lot of other influences in terms of our brain health and whether we're, you know, what our risk will be in terms of dementia. And we know that there is a genetic component, which, you know, we can't necessarily do a lot about. We also know that things like physical activity, particularly as we get older, that continuing to be physically active can be protective. Other things that have been shown to increase the risk of dementia and cognitive decline is income levels. So those on lower income levels, just like we see with a lot of, you know, chronic diseases, the lower income tends to have a higher incidence. And the other thing is exposure to pollution. So things like smoking, but also secondhand smoke, and then just general pollution and exposure to those sorts of things can increase your risk of dementia. So I'm certainly not saying here that nutrition is the only thing that is going to affect your risk. There are lots of different risk factors for dementia and cognitive decline as we age, and we need to sort of consider all of that, I guess, together. There is also now a new study that has been conducted in Finland, and this has been the first randomized control trial that's actually looking at multiple lifestyle interventions for the risk of dementia and cognitive decline. So rather than just focusing on nutrition or just focusing on certain things, they're actually looking at, they've looked at the all the different factors that can affect the risk. So that's interesting. I think we need to kind of put it into perspective and realize that there are lots of risk factors and we're exposed to lots of different things that can affect our risk as we age. Okay, so let's have a chat about this mind diet anyway, because what we do find within the mind diet are there particular groups of foods and foods that we know from studies do have a protective effect on the brain. And many of these foods could be incorporated into different cultural foods or cultural eating patterns. But of course, there are some that possibly don't show up at all in certain cultural, cultural eating patterns. So I'm just going to go through and talk about what these foods were and, you know, why they're protective of the brain. And again, it's really important that we think about eating patterns and there's been a real shift from, in terms of research, from individual nutrients and so on and what effect it has on our health to eating patterns and styles of eating and all the foods together as a whole rather than looking at individual components, because we don't just eat nutrients. You know, there's been many studies in the past where they just give people, you know, a particular vitamin or a particular, and it might be, say, in like a supplement form or something like that, to see if it has, you know, an effect on whatever it is that they're studying. But we don't just, that's not how we eat. That's not how we get nutrients. We get nutrients from food and we eat different foods, and our whole pattern and style of eating is what actually affects our risk. And so there's a big shift in research where we're actually looking more at overall dietary patterns rather than single groups of nutrients or single foods. Okay, so these are the sorts of foods that have been found to be protective of the brain. And one of them is, I should say nutrients. I'll talk about the nutrients and then what foods kind of come under those. But polyphenols and antioxidants have been found to be protective of the brain. So when we can get oxidation in different parts of our body, and the brain is one of them as well, and that can actually cause damage and issues within the tissues of the brain. So antioxidants can actually bind to these what they call free radicals. I always laugh at that word radical, and help to protect the brain from the damage that can have. And so things like berries and vegetables feature quite highly in the mind diet because they are high in things like polyphenols and antioxidants, and we know that that can be protective of the brain. Vitamin E is another thing. Vitamin E is an anti-inflammatory and an antioxidant. So the big common thing that we find in the foods that are protective of the brain is that they stop oxidation or those free radicals and those things that can damage the brain, and they reduce inflammation, because they're two things that can actually cause damage. So vitamin E is both an anti-inflammatory and an antioxidant. And the diet includes things like nuts and olive oil, which are very high in vitamin E. Then we have omega-3. So omega-3 fats, they are particularly found in fish. There are some plant-based omega-3s. They're slightly different, but they're found in things like linseed or flax seeds, either the seeds or the oil, some nuts like walnuts. And omega-3s they form the building blocks for neurons. So neurons are the parts of the nervous system that talk to each other within the brain and other parts of our nervous system. So omega-3 are the building blocks for that. So they have an important function in the brain. And then the other is B vitamins. So B vitamins have found to reduce or stop homocysteine levels from increasing. Homocysteine has been found to, you know, if there's elevated levels, has been found to increase chronic diseases and dementia and, you know, problems with brain health is one of them. And so they're found in things like leafy greens, whole grain breads and cereals, and poultry. And so the sorts of foods that we're sort of looking at and wanting to try to include are, as I mentioned, those sort of green leafy veggies, so kale, spinach, cooked greens and salads, vegetables full stop, so lots of veggies are going to be protective. Berries, so any sort of berries like blueberries, strawberries, raspberries, and so on, because of the antioxidant effect of those. Nuts, in the MIND diet, they don't specify what kind of nuts. So it's really just a variety of nuts, or, you know, obviously if you eat a variety like anything, you're more likely to get all the things that your body needs. Olive oil. And again, this sort of really comes from that Mediterranean style of eating, because olive oil is the main type of fat that they tend to use in the Mediterranean. And like I said, this is probably one example where it may not be culturally appropriate in other styles of eating. So other cultural food patterns, olive oil may not be one of the fats that they use. So this is where it kind of gets tricky to kind of prescribe this to everyone. Whole grains, as I mentioned earlier, which are really high in the B vitamins. Fish, so particularly fatty type fish like salmon, sardines, tuna, and, you know, tin versions or canned versions are perfectly fine and tend to be more economical. Beans, like legumes and so on, also have a lot of these sort of phytochemicals and so on that can be protective and helpful. I think I talk about dried beans like lentils and kidney beans and so on a lot. It seems to be one of those foods that is universally, you know, important in different health conditions. Poultry I mentioned, which was high in B vitamins. And the other thing that they have included is wine, which is interesting. No more than one glass a day, red or white. There's some evidence that it may benefit your brain. However, we then need to also weigh that up with, there's other research out there that says that alcohol, any alcohol, will increase your risk of cancer. So this is where it can be tricky. However, we do see in Mediterranean cultures, for example, where having a glass of wine with a meal is quite common part of their dietary patterns, that the cancer risk is actually quite low. And that's possibly because, as I said, we want to look at the whole dietary pattern together, not separate foods, because yes, there are certain foods that might increase or decrease or whatever, but when you put it together with all the other foods, potentially the benefits of some of the other foods and the antioxidants in the wine are somehow, I don't know, cancelling out the effect of that alcohol might have. I don't know, but that's why we really need to look at, you know, the whole thing, the whole dietary pattern, rather than just individual foods or nutrients. So that's basically what I know so far about nutrition and you know, brain health, particularly in terms of an aging brain and what might happen as we age. So I hope that was helpful. As I said, you know, that I can go by what research is being done. And like I said, I do have concerns around the fact that often research is concentrated around certain populations, and we don't necessarily have enough evidence and good research to tell us about other cultures and other cultural ways of eating. So that's something, I guess, that we need to really just keep in mind when we're looking at these sorts of recommendations. But at this stage, it appears that we know that these sorts of foods, and because of the nutrients that they provide, can be protective of the brain. We know that from observational studies, mostly in Northern America and some parts of Europe, that people who eat more of these foods tend to have lower incidence or lower risk of dementia or cognitive decline. However, interventional studies have not at this stage, and like I said, there really has only been one so far, interventional studies have not really shown an effect. So it's early stages, but I think it's a really interesting research, and I think it's going to continue because, like I said, you know, dementia is a big issue in terms of cause of death, and I think we will have more research coming out in the future that might be able to tell us a little bit more about whether this really does work. If you want to give it a go and you want to increase some of these foods that I talked about today and maybe include, provided you think that it's appropriate for you and include sort of a mind style of eating, it's certainly not going to hurt because all of those foods we know are good for us. They've got plenty of nutrients that we have evidence for them increasing our health and improving our risk of a number of different diseases and chronic diseases. So I think it's safe to say that, yes, go ahead and give it a try, even though interventional studies at this stage are not showing that it's going to make a huge difference. But what we do know is that it appears that how we eat, in conjunction with all those other sort of risk factors that I mentioned, can have an effect on, you know, our risk of dementia as we age. So I think it's important to think about our brain and think about what we can do now to keep it as healthy as possible as we get older, because we all talk about wanting to get old. Well, we talk about wanting to live a long life, but we want to live a long quality life. So that's, you know, that's something that we should be trying to aim for, knowing, of course, that there are a lot of factors that are outside of our control. So it doesn't mean that you can do all these and you'll live a long, healthy life and never have any issues. We know that there's a lot of factors that are outside of our control and we can't really do much about that, but we can do what we can. So I hope that was interesting. And if I have any updates and any new things that I might find out about, you know, new research into brain health and nutrition, I will certainly do another podcast episode to update you. I'll leave it there. And just a reminder that if you are wanting more information about nutrition for, you know, women in midlife who whether it's specific to sort of perimenopause and menopause, if we're just looking at general health for us at this age, head over to my website. I'll put all the links down below, and also follow me over on social media so that you can get a few other regular tidbits and information from me throughout the week. Thank you so much for listening, and I look forward to being back in your ears very, very soon.